Blog Talk Radio.
Archangels, ghosts, and Bigfoot. Oh my! It's just another night for Supernatural Girls. Real stories, real answers to life's biggest supernatural mysteries. And now for another exciting interview with paranormal experts from this world and others. Psychic medium Helene Olson and paranormal researcher Patricia Baker. Here are Supernatural Girls.
Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of Supernatural Girls. I am here with my wonderful co-host, Helene Olson. Hi, Helene. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Patricia?
I'm great. I'm so excited about this show. This is a stellar cast we have here tonight, huh?
It sure is. I love how you put it together. It's just great.
Oh,
and
well,
Raven's reputation precedes himself, and so he's going to be fabulous. I know that.
Oh, yep. For sure. And I can't wait to hear all about this grimoire of the Thorn-Blooded Witch. What a powerful book this was. My goodness. I think it is his most powerful one so far.
Well, he has a depth of knowledge that other people don't have. He's really spent his lifetime getting into this, right?
Yes, he really has. And we're having him on during our spooky October month. And things are getting spookier, aren't they?
It seems like the veil grows ever thinner, Patricia.
Yes, because you and I were talking about...
I keep hearing from clients, you know, it's like, I saw this, I heard that, you know, people who don't expect it, put it that way.
Yeah.
We expect it, right? Every day we expect something strange.
Part of life for us is just every day, you know? But it does seem like it's ramping up. Even you and I were talking about the fact that we may have to do a clearing right here because there's a lot of activity and we've kind of got to take a close look at who's been coming around.
Yeah, but I've also noticed that I'm seeing more beings in the evening, and maybe Raven can answer that question as to whether it's more prevalent or more noticeable now as we grow ever closer to All Hallows Eve. But I just think it's, in general, the veil is thinned.
Yeah, I think you're right, and who knows? There might be other things going on simultaneously that's creating the situation where more people are seeing more entities. And like you said, even you're seeing more things walking through your bedroom.
Well, wherever I am, you know, especially in the evening, you know, driving around, you can kind of see more often, I would say, when I'm not looking for it or anything, you know, just nature energies or spirits or whatever is out there, you know. It's interesting.
It is. It's interesting that it's coming around and paying us all a visit. So we definitely need Raven's expertise on this tonight. So I'm so glad he's joining us. And, of course, we have Patricia Kirkman, world-famous numerologist. And we're changing it up a little bit with Patricia this week. And for Spooky October, we're actually looking at spooky numbers and things that have happened in the past that are not only spooky but kind of tragic. And tonight we have Patricia on. So hi, Patricia. How are you this evening?
I'm doing absolutely fabulous. Looking at a very misty, rainy evening for us. That's strange.
Yeah.
And overcast. And I've been smelling the cigar smoke of my husband, who passed away 2 years ago, every time I walk near his area today.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
And nobody smokes here. The only one that did was him, and he's been gone for 2 years, and I'm going, okay.
Wow. So he's paying a little visit today. How interesting.
I think he is. I thought how apropos that it should be today.
Yes. Yes. Oh, my goodness. Well, we're all going to have to commiserate on that one later, that's for sure.
Definitely.
Now, tonight, we also have another wonderful guest, a dear friend of mine, Victoria Gross, and she's joining us from the West Coast this evening. And her great-great-great-grandmother was unfortunately accused of witchcraft in Salem. and was the only person to be hung as a witch in Salem. So we're going to bring Victoria on the show. Victoria's going to tell us a little bit about this lady and what happened. And Patricia, you're taking a look at the numbers on this, so we're going to get a whole picture that we've never heard about before. It's going to be fascinating. So Victoria, welcome to the show.
Oh, well, welcome. Thank you for having me. I'm excited about it.
Well, and I should also mention, Victoria, you're a very talented tarot reader yourself, so the gifts, the psychic gifts have been passed on to you, that's for sure.
Thank you very much. Yes, it was my she's my ninth great-grandmother that was hung as a witch. And actually, there's some misinformation on the Internet. There were quite a few people that were hung, and she was one of the last group.
Okay.
That was hung on September 22nd, 1692. Her name was Margaret Stevenson Scott, and she was born, we believe, March 28th, 1616. My brother has done genealogy for the last 30 years and has gone back very far from in our family. And she came over from England. My mother's family originates from Wales to England and the Isle of Man, and then to America. So she was accused on September 17th of that same year, 1692, of being a witch, and then she was hung along with eight other people. That was the final group of hanging of people that were accused of witchcraft. And she never, she stood her ground. You know, she was just a poor woman. And they, you know, accused a lot of poor people that couldn't pay their taxes or their property, you know, that's how they got their property. So It was very tragic.
That is. So, Patricia, you've been looking at the numbers on all of this. What did you find out?
Well, I was very surprised to find out that throughout all of the major issues that were taking place, it all revolved around nine personal years. A nine universal year, which was a time of ending of things. So they had so much going on, and nine is supposed to be either it's all about drama, but it's about either helping people go forward or it's taking away everything they possibly can. And during that period of time, we were working with the nine universal year where there was no empathy. Usually nine, we try to have empathy and sympathy. Think of Barbara Mandela, how he works with people, Mother Teresa. These people just work the opposite side of everything. And most of the areas that had issues were taking place in a 7, 8, or 9 month, which deals with the wrapping up of what had been going on with the universal areas. And having taken a look at your grandmother, past history, was it in fact the 18th or the 28th her birthday? Are you sure? Do you know?
From the family records, we do have March 28th.
March 28th, okay. Because that has made a difference in how I was looking at things because I wanted to be sure. And that means that her birth destiny number was a 27-9 also. All these nines. So she came in to make a major change in some aspect to make a difference for other people, but it didn't necessarily make it better for her.
Right. Wow.
Yeah. So even her birthday was a one, so there was issues with the men of the time, and also a major issue when it came to her being able to take care of everyone. She was put in a role where she was supposed to take care of others, and she wasn't given any opportunity to go forward. She ended up having to work for everything on behalf of herself and even on behalf of her husband, because I'm not picking him up as being a strong individual at all.
Right, and we have some of the records that say that he wasn't a strong individual and that he was accused of theft. Different things like that. And so after he died, there were things that she had to take care of that was his responsibility. And I believe she had, in a record, we show seven children, and quite a few of them had died very young. And at the time of her hanging, none of the surviving children had attended that. So she was left destitute from her husband and also from her children.
Well, you know, what's very unique is taking a look at her birth name. That was quite. She was extremely spiritual, but she was also very intuitive, which is probably what added to their fear of her being a witch.
Mm.
Because she would know things that other people wouldn't just ordinarily know. And as we well know, that a person that's very intuitive, they fall into this. And if they can't explain it to anybody else, it creates a problem. And she was very headstrong and very hard-headed.
Wow.
But she was very capable of making things happen. And that might have been where the illusion of witchcraft came in, where she was concerned.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
That's fascinating.
For her. Yeah, it is. It's very fascinating. And I know from the records that we have that she stood her ground, and she you know, wouldn't admit to anything that wasn't true. So I really honor her for, you know, she knew that they were going to hang her, and she wasn't going to admit that she was somebody that she wasn't. So, yeah, she was a very strong woman.
Most definitely, most definitely. And for her, it was more important for her to be a leader in her own right, because she was very, very flexible, but very hard-headed. But equally, she would give at the same point in time. So she didn't mince words with anybody, and she didn't take. She had a way of saying things that just kind of came out. And that day would have been very difficult, because it would have come out almost like a shotgun blast today, as we look at how people say things so quick and so rapid, and into it. Where at that point in time, she was supposed to be meek, being the female.
Right.
And there was no meekness about her. She was a very good manipulator if she had to be, but she was always a team player. So that was part of the things that made her come across as different to many of the other females at the time.
Interesting.
Well, thank you so much for that insight, Patricia. That's Victoria. I hope that's helpful in understanding something more about your great-great-great-grandma. I mean, she sounds like quite a lady, and God bless her. I mean, what a terrible thing to have to endure, but it sounds like she stayed true to her own self.
Really? Well, I think, thank you, Patricia, for doing the numbers on her. It's such a blessing that you did that. And Patricia, thank you for asking, you know, for contacting me today and asking me for this information.
My pleasure.
You know, it was such a tragic part of our history, but a very important part of our history, too. So I honor her, and I think of her. So thank you so much.
Well, you're so welcome, Victoria.
Carry a portion of her with you.
Yes. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. We so appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for asking me.
Okay. So, Patricia, you are also going to share with us a little bit about the number 9, which comes up tomorrow. So let's take a listen to what you have to say about
Patricia,
that. We're back to the 9s again.
Yeah, Patricia Kirkman, you have to be careful, because I love the number 9.
Uh-oh.
Well, there's nothing wrong with the number 9. 9 is either the best of or can be the worst of.
Oh.
The 9 is what we do for the world at large. I live in a 9 house. It's about humanity and what we do for others. But there are those that take the 9 and they strip it of all its empathy and care, and they use it for their own evil, shall we say. Because if you don't give with it, it puts you, you could become a pinata very easily.
Wow.
But nine,
so
nine,
what do we have to watch
world
out for tomorrow, Patricia? Anything
in
particular?
Well, the thing is, the month itself, remember, we're in a universal month that is an 8, which deals with our finances, people in control, or people that want to control us. Well, the fact that we're in a 9-day tomorrow says that we are also universally dealing with an 8-day, which is all about our money. And so we're going to spend more than we should. Watch it. There's going to be some sleight of hand given to us by others, because we're in a retrograde, and what we see and what we think we're seeing aren't necessarily the same thing.
So I spent too much the other day, now I'm going to spend it again?
Oh, no.
Well, you might spend it again, or you may find out that the fine print says take it back.
I'm going to have to leave my purse home, that's all.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You're the only one I know that's going to have a lock on it, and you don't get the code.
Oh, boy.
Sounds like it's going to be necessary for all of us. Oh, my goodness.
Well, with this retrograde, it's really making it difficult because we're not really anticipating what the end result. We think we see what it is, and it ends up being like a sleight of hand.
Mm.
So that being said, be careful.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we
okay,
will.
Well. Until you drop.
Thank you for the heads up anyway. Yeah.
Yes, thank you so much, Patricia. I know you'll be back next week with more insight, and we'll have another spooky set of numbers for you.
Oh,
so
yes.
Thank you.
I can't wait.
Oh, I know. This is going to be a great month, and everybody who likes spooky stuff, spooky stories, we've got so much coming up for everybody. So now we are going to move to our guest. And again, Patricia Kirkman, thank you so much. If anybody would like a personal reading with Patricia Kirkman, you can go to her website, which is patriciakirkman.com, and you can contact her there and set up your own private reading.
Well, thank you. And ladies, have a lovely evening, and I can't wait to hear the guest.
Oh, good.
Thank you.
Thank you. So we've got a really incredible guest tonight. We have Raven Gramasi. And Raven is a neo-pagan scholar and award-winning author of over 12 books. How does he do it, Helene? 12 books?
I don't know. Do you know I'm the wrong person to ask that question
to? Well, 12 books, and they're really good, all of them, on witchcraft, Wicca, and neo-paganism, including Old World witchcraft and Italian witchcraft. He is a member of the American Folklore Society and is co-founder and co-director of the Crossroads Fellowship, a modern mystery school tradition. He lives right near me here in Springfield, Mass., and his website is ravengramasi.net. Raven, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, it's so great to have you back. You have a tremendous book here. Couldn't put it down, and I do believe this book is a power book. This one, you must have been motivated to write this from the depths of your soul. I mean, this one is tremendous.
Well, it became quite a work as I was writing it. It took off on its own, and you know, I had to run to keep up with it. But a lot of people are commenting that it's one of the more, I think, potent books that have come through me.
It really is. In my opinion, and Helene, I know you've read it too. I opened up the cover and just started reading. I couldn't put it down, but then I found myself wanting to get other chapters, other information. I mean, you've got so much in here, and it's all really great information.
Thank you.
It's the real deal, this book.
It's stirring up a lot. You know, it's going back. I like to call it ever ancient and ever new, because it's very rooted material. It's going way back into the ancestral kinds of connections and modes of thought from which we draw our magic. And but yet it's designed for practical use for, you know, people of contemporary times. So I think it's a nice bridge between past and present.
Tell us a little bit about you for some of our audience members who may not be familiar with your work and who you are and how all of this got started for you in your life.
Oh, boy, my life story, huh?
In a nutshell, yeah.
Well, I sort of cut my teeth on what I call peasant witchcraft, folk magic traditions. My mother was Old World. She was born and raised in Italy. And she brought over a lot of that Old World stuff with her when she married my father, who was an American soldier during World War II. So when he married her, he sent her back to the United States while he, you know, finished up the war effort in Italy. And so I learned a lot from her about spirits and other world beings and, you know, bits of magic here and there. But then over time, of course, I met other people, you know, and learned from other teachers and, you know, went on to actually start teaching myself and running groups I've been involved in several different traditions of Wicca and witchcraft over the years, just trying to get a good collective feel for the commonality, if you will, you know, of what all of our ancestors practiced and all the cultural ways in which they did it. And it sort of ended up giving me, you know, really kind of what I, you know, bird's eye view, if you excuse the expression, and, you know, able to then begin to teach a cohesive tradition that I think resembles more of what our ancestors were doing as opposed to strictly modern methods of practice.
Now, I do want to mention that you and your beautiful wife do classes. You offer online classes for people, and can that also be found at the same website, RavenGrimasi.net?
We do offer a course of study. We call it home study courses that people can do, monthly downloads of lessons. You can find it on our RavensLoft.biz website.
Okay, RavensLoft.biz. Yes, because I actually, we were all talking about this in the office today, and the girls were saying that they were interested in learning more, and I said, well, then go to the website and look for those classes that you teach. So it's a once-a-month download that you offer. So,
right, and we have different courses, and some are, you know, like 9 months long, some are 13 months long, but each one kind of comes in on a different level.
Well, there's so much information and so much to learn for anybody who wants to do ritual in order to connect with the deeper self and the deeper presence in the world around us. So you talk a lot about the green realm. Can you explain a little bit more about that and how the thorn-blooded witch path is intrinsically connected to the green realm?
Sure, I'd love to. It's really rooted in the idea of at one time humans were forest dwellers, and that was our world. And so a lot of our ideas formed in a forest environment. So, you know, and then from there, when we left the forest, eventually we became farmers after we were hunters. But we've always had a reliance on the greenwood plants and agriculture and all this type of thing. And there is a consciousness, if you will, a spirit of the land consciousness that our ancestors understood. And we have collectively, as humans, gotten away from that with our technology, and we've tried to master nature. And becoming what we believe ourselves to be, masters of nature, we've lost a lot of the ways of connecting. And so we have a lot of complications in our lives now, in modern times, because we're no longer part of the natural order of things. We've created our own sort of separated mini-universe, if you will, and paid a dear price for that, including a lot of the health issues that we have in modern times. So our path is to return back to living in common cause with nature, turning back to the natural way life was meant to be, as far as our participation in the life in the world around us. We begin this particular path, which we call the ash, birch, and willow tradition. That's my personal practice path. And what we do is we connect with what we call a spirit mediator, which is an entity called She of the Thorn-Blooded Rose. And what we do is we prick our thumb on the thorn, and then we squeeze out a little bit of blood into water, and we pour that on the base of the rose plant as an offering, you know, of our life essence. And then we take liquid chlorophyll, which is a plant blood, the green chlorophyll, and we sip that in exchange. So we exchange the blood of humankind and the blood of plant kind into a covenant, almost like the old-fashioned American Indian blood brother, you know, pact.
Mm, yes, right.
And in exchanging our life essence, the green for the red, red for the green, we come into partnership again. The earth remembers us as people who live in common cause. And in exchange for that, there's a lot of information, tranquility, a lot of peace flowing. You know, we really become part of the natural order again. And you can really feel the shift, you know, when you leave the mechanical world and electronic world of humankind behind, well, not ultimately behind, but when you shift with a greater focus on the natural emanation of the Earth's energy, it's astonishing how your life sort of readjusts and redirects, you know, to the natural compass.
Mm. And then when that happens for you, you feel a change throughout your physical body, your the way your mind thinks. What do you feel?
Yeah, it is a shift. You begin to realize that you're part of everything. Everything from walking on the earth, you realize that even that is a partnership of your feet touching the ground. You know, to see trees around you, you realize that these are living beings. Your awareness is sharpened to the reality of the world you live in rather than the artificial world we've created as humans. All of a sudden you become so cognizant of the natural life around you and what the planet's doing and the energy of moon and stars and sun. You know, you're back in the original program. You know, what I jokingly refer to as the factory settings are restored, you know.
That's a good way to put it. Now, do you think when we were forest people, that mm-hmm. we were in more communion with the fairy world, that we were able to see it more clearly and communicate with fairy beings?
Yeah, what I think is that we weren't as distracted, you know, as we are now. So we were in the natural order, and I think we were very much aware of non-material beings that interfaced with us and moved through our world and out of our world, and I think it was just very natural. You know, we complicated it over time and we've cut off some of that connection, although there have always been what I call root tenders, the witches and mystics of the ages who have kept the knowledge of how to not lose that, not sever that connection. But yeah, I think we were in more partnership and contact when we were forest dwellers, and I think that our modern technology has changed our vibration. You know, our cell phones, our TVs, the cell towers, the humming of engines, you know, it has created a different energy than that one that we bathed in when we lived in the woods.
Mm. Yes, I think it has. But, Helene, you have a question for Raven about what's happening now with all these people that are seeing things that they haven't seen before.
I apologize. I've been listening with rapt attention. It's just I'm fighting the tail end of this cold, so I apologize.
The last bit
won't go, and I apologize. But really, Raven, I agree with everything you're saying. And I think up till even 150 years ago, people were very in tune with what was going on around them. You know, they had to stick their finger in the air just to decide what the weather was going to be the next day, right? So they were much more sensitive to everything in nature that was going on around them.
Right,
but
we were still, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't have the distractions that you talked about, and so it was easier to be more open intuitively to any
mm-hmm.
kind of energy in nature. But lately, especially the last several years, it seems like people who are never psychic or felt that, I mean, I think everyone's psychic, but, you know, they never felt they were psychic, and now they're coming up with seeing things, feeling presences around them, you know, taking
mm-hmm.
walks in the woods and realizing that there's other life there. And
right.
What is your opinion of that right now?
Well, you know, the communications that I receive is, you know, because of what we're doing to our planet, the ancestral spirits have a greater stake in our survival because, you know, our survival is getting kind of iffy.
Mm-hmm.
And so the ancestors are speaking louder in our blood and louder in the space around us. And I think that's why people are seeing more phenomena. You know, they're feeling more inner guidance. They're seeing things out of the corner of their eyes, you know. I think a lot of that is because the spirits of this place and our ancestors themselves are trying to get us to wake up and take care of business so that everyone continues. You know, the dead do not want to be forgotten, and their vested interest in the living is that they survive through the living, what we call the living river of blood that flows from generation to generation. So as long as we, the current generation, continue on, then so do those who came before us.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
I look at it more like our vibration can be disturbing to them. If we're not on the right path, then they're being disturbed.
Well, that,
like
I think,
noisy neighbors. You know.
I think that that's true, but I think that the increased awareness is due to the other side reaching out more strongly than it has.
Oh, they definitely are. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
that is true. But it just feels to me like, and Patricia, I know you felt the same thing, that the veil itself, even though all of these beings, entities, life forms, everybody's reaching out towards us to help humanity, that with that effort, the veil itself has become thinner in some ways.
That's probably true, and I think it has to do with their concentrated energy output.
Okay.
You know, it's turning it back the way it used to be when we were forest dwellers, you know, that it really wasn't at all. And people, you know, entities passed freely to and from. And, you know, I think that we're seeing a shift in the energy barriers because the other side is so potently directing energy towards us. I think these doorways are no longer just cracked open. I think some of them are swung open wide.
Right.
Ah, yes.
Right. Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Well, you also bring up, again, the rose and the symbol of the rose in your book. And one thing that really surprised me is that the rose is also a symbol of secrecy. That's something that's the first time I've ever heard that before.
Yes. It's actually a very old occult symbol of the rose, and its presence in a setting for, I'll use the term occultists, represents to the gathered people that whatever is spoken among us is not to be repeated. It is what they call sub rosa, beneath the rose. And so a lot of magical societies will bring a rose into a secret teaching session so that everyone understands, you know, that everything spoken from that point forward is secret. You also have a lot of old secret societies that chose the symbol of the rose, and also some chose the name of the rose, like the Rosicrucians, for example. The mystical rose, the rosy cross, these are all their symbols. So the rose is really a very, very old mystical, you know, it connects later on, you know, with love and romance, but that really wasn't its original connection. In fact, you know, it ties in with the idea of the Venus, the goddess of love, was not originally a goddess of love. And that's sort of what happened with the rose, too. She was originally a goddess of cultivated gardens. And those cultivated gardens included herbs. And so it was love potions that were made from herbs that eventually gave Venus, the goddess of gardens, the role of the goddess of love.
Fascinating.
And so the rose sort of follows her as well, you know, from the garden into love. But originally it was a symbol. Yeah.
Now, when you talk about doing ritual with the rose bush, now, of course, we're all in New England here where we come into winter. And is it okay to use a rose that's cut instead of a rose bush for your ritual with these types of things?
Well, there are some rituals in which you'll be using flowers themselves, so you would cut them and bring them in. But the rose, you in our tradition, you have to have a rose bush planted somewhere in the ground. And you do various offerings and stuff, you know, to that, so that the roots of the rose plant take your offerings down into the what we call the organic memory of earth, and interact with our ancestors who abide in those places. So, you know, like here in Massachusetts, of course, when it snows and the plants go dormant, you know, we don't work obviously as much until the spring with that, but we will bring roses in. And if we have a ritual technique where you take dried rose petals or leaves or anything like that, all you need to do is drop some, 3 drops of liquid chlorophyll onto them. And it's magically reanimates them. So we call it awakening the bones. So you sprinkle a little bit of that on the dried plants, and then you can use that, you know, as like a proxy, you know, rose bush during the winter.
Oh, my goodness. That is wonderful. Yeah, I mean, again, one of the most exciting things about reading this book is that you basically give a step-by-step for a lot of ritual here. And there's
right.
a lot of questions coming in from the chat room about the tools you use and all that kind of stuff. So I'll get to those next, everybody. I do have your questions here in front of me, which is great. You know, there's such a wonderful interest in your book and the tools that you're providing. But now here's a question. Mandrake. And this was also a question in the office today when people were talking about it. They didn't know Mandrake was real. They thought it was only from Harry Potter. So talk to us about Mandrake, the sorcerer's root. This is not just from Harry Potter. Mandrake is real. So tell us about that.
Oh, absolutely real. It shows up in ancient writings, pre-Christian writings, for example. It's called the sorcerer's root because it has been in the hands of magic users since, you know, pre-Christian times. It is a plant whose roots very frequently look like the body of a human. It looks like a puppet. So when you pull them up, it actually looks like a little person. Not everyone, but frequently when you pull them up. Sometimes they just look like roots, but often they will look like humans. So it was given the title, the plant that wanted to be human, or the plant that dreamed of being human. And because it looked human, you know, our primitive ancestors felt that it must have a connection between humankind and plant kind. So they saw it almost like a mediator or an ambassador between the greenwood realm and the human realm. And they believed that it was had a spirit within it, as we believe we have spirits in our bodies. Our ancestors believed a spirit abided within the body of the mandrake root. And so they would use it for magic.
Female and male, right? There's two different kinds?
Yeah, there are. There's Mandragora officinalis, which is the male plant, and the Mandragora autumnalis, which is the female plant. They look very, very similar. They are the same species, but they just have slight differences in the leaves. But, yeah, there are the male and females.
You use mandrake root during what types of ceremonies or for what types of ceremonies?
Well, there's a variety of them. The most common ones would be for personal protection, for personal empowerment to strengthen your own, you know, energy levels. We also use it to communicate with plant spirits because the idea that the mandrake is an ambassador between the, you know, greenwood realm and the human world, we use it to call upon the spirits of nature and direct them to us, you know, so that we can work with them in partnership.
Where do you get mandrake roots? Where do they grow? And I'm sure you can buy them somewhere too, but are they're not local, are they, to New England?
No, they're native to Southern Europe, actually. They were spread, you know, around the world by the Romans in ancient times, but they're very hard to find. They're very hard to grow. Typically, I buy seeds on the internet, and then I'll buy 50 seeds, and of the 50 seeds, maybe 14 will sprout. And of the 14, five will make it to adulthood. So they're very, very difficult to grow. They're a natural, they grow naturally in the woods. And so, you know, it's difficult to get the soil conditions and temperatures right in most parts of our country here in the U.S. They seem to grow pretty well here in Massachusetts, but we grow them in pots because we have to bring them in during the winter. They can't winter over.
So, yeah, so you know a lot about these. And it's great that you grow them yourself and nurture them along. And then how long do they have to actually grow before you can harvest them?
Well, we don't harvest all of a plant because we don't take the life of our plants. We just take we ask them for pieces, you know, like a piece of root or a piece of leaf. But I have one mandrake plant that is now about 15 years old.
Wow!
Massive roots. I have some juveniles from last season, so my little my little teenage plants there, and then I have a few baby sprouts that came up oddly enough just recently. But I've been growing magical plants for some 20 something years, and there are some areas of the country where they just won't grow because it's too hot, like, you know, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona. It'd be really difficult to grow them there. We grew them in California, but it was very difficult. But moving back here to New England, they thrive here until winter.
Oh, my. Well, that's good news. And when you grow them yourself versus mm-hmm. when you buy them in a shop, there must be a whole different connection with that.
Well, there is. They're difficult to find live plants. You can't go to a nursery or anything. I mean, there is a few that I've heard of that those nurseries that are out in that have fields. I understand there's one. I haven't been there, but there's one that has mandrakes and somewhere near the East Coast. I don't remember the name of the place, but seeds are what we grow. And again, you know, they're difficult to sprout. Any plant that, when we have potted plants, we still want to connect with the organic memory of the earth. So we buy pots that have the holes in the bottom. And then we put the pots in the earth and sort of, you know, push them in a little bit so they make direct contact with the land itself. And we have them always sitting on the ground so that they're always rooted in the earth. Except, of course, during the winter, like I said, we bring them in and we have a pantry that has become our sort of winter nursery. We keep all of our plants. The mandrake plant, actually, at full maturity, its root can be over 3 feet long.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, and I think when you grow something yourself, it creates a relationship over time that makes that so much more powerful than if I were just to go to an herb shop and try to buy a dried mandrake root,
yes.
Even though I'm sure the magical ritual would still be able to be completed without a problem, but there is that relationship that you have with your own mandrake roots that I think must make a whole new depth for you with this.
Yeah, it does. It adds what I call more juju to it. You know, they become spirit allies. They become like the familiar spirit to the witch. You know, I talk to the mandrakes, I, you know, sort of pet their leaves and, you know, I give them special offerings in the water. You know, I'm mindful of them every day. We have mental communication. Then on All Hallows Eve, we uproot the mandrakes. We clean their roots and then we bathe them in a mixture of milk and wine and dry them off. And then at that point, you can ask them for a piece of root. You quickly snip off just a little bit of root, and then you bury them back in the pot for another year. So we always cleanse and consecrate the plants very carefully on what people call Halloween night, All Hallows Eve or Samhain. And that is our special time of communion where you're actually holding the root. And it feels very much like you have a an infant in your arms. You know, it's very intimate. There's a lot of energy connection. But yeah, that is very special, which you wouldn't have, you're right, if you just went and bought, you know, something on the shelf of a nursery.
Well, it sounds like they get quite the spa treatment, and it's all done with great attention, love, and care, which again, as you say, it increases the juju, and it just a nice, loving, respectful relationship that also
it
our
is.
Native American people have talked about that we've kind of lost. And here it is again with what you do, with this ritual that you do on All Hallows Eve. It sounds just wonderful.
Right.
It's so powerful.
Well, and you know, I mean, you know, talking about American Indians, the Hopi Indians, they have spirit kachina dolls, and lots of their spirit kachina dolls are plant spirits. So they understood that plants were conscious living beings that had spirits within them. The more that you give to the plant spirit, the more it gives back to you. It really is a relationship.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. I mean, I know that even for me, in my little garden, when I grow cucumbers and tomatoes, it's, you know, if I buy something from the store and it kind of goes a little off, I put it in the compost pile. I don't really think twice about it. But when I grow this with my own effort and my own hands in the dirt, I want every part of that tomato and that cucumber eaten.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah,
that's right.
It's like there's so much went into the relationship of growing that plant,
right,
tending it. You know, it's like
well, there's a sacredness there, isn't there? I mean, because you feel special,
yes,
about it, what you really have is a sacredness of relationship that you don't have to a tomato that was bought at the grocery store.
It's so different, and there's absolutely no idea in my mind that I would waste any of it. It becomes much more precious that way.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, everybody, just stay tuned. We're having a wonderful conversation here with Raven Vermasi, who is the author of a terrific new book that you must go out and buy. It's called Grimoire of the Thorn-Blooded Witch, Mastering the Five Arts of Old World Witchery, available in bookstores and on Amazon.com. So everybody stay tuned. We're going to take a short commercial break, and we'll be right back. If you have a question for Raven, call in at 646-478-0828. That's 646-478-0828. We'll be right back.
This is Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic One Company. As one of the pioneers of the Organic One movement, since 1980, I have brought you the very best and most authentic organic wines directly to your table. I work with small family estates who grow certified organic grapes and produce exceptional wines. You can purchase our wines individually from our website at theorganicwinecompany.com or join one of our wine clubs. Our organic wines are perfect for you and for your family as gifts for friends and relatives, and they are simply spectacular for the holidays. Visit us at theorganicwinecompany.com to enjoy the very best organic wines conveniently delivered to your door. I am Veronique Raskin, passionate about my mission. I offer to you vegan, organic, and biodynamic wines, wines made by people of the heart, wines with a heart. Au revoir. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE.
Your property tax bill. Have you seen it lately? It's frightening. Your property taxes are going up while your home value is going down. It's time to fight back and win. For the real truth about the property tax system, get attorney Pat Quintilian's book, Are You Getting Screwed on Your Property Taxes? How to Find Out and How to Fix It. Attorney Quintilian answers all your questions and gives you the facts you need to fight a property tax bill that is spiraling out of control. You'll also read about what happens to property owners who don't check their property records, only to find out too late they're taxed on square footage, fixtures, and even buildings that they don't own. Is this happening to you? Learn your rights. Buy Attorney Pat Quintilian's book today. Are You Getting Screwed on Your Property Taxes? How to Find Out and How to Fix It. Available on Amazon.com. Are you ready for a new experience of freedom and powerful connection? Would you like a positive, effortless change in your life? Then come to CosmicFusion.com, where we offer the most advanced energy clearing and expansion techniques in the world, with a quantum vortex energy to activate your divine blueprint and life's purpose. When your soul leads the way with cosmic fusion and quantum vortex energy, you can break clear of past difficulties and blocks with the power of the source. With cosmic fusion, the source energy does the work for you. It's easy and effortless. Listen to our free meditation right from our Cosmic Fusion website, the Cosmic Code Meditation. Sign up for one of our interactive webinars today. Come to Cosmic Fusion, www.kosmicfusion.com, to experience an effortless awakening and transformation. Are you ready for an upgrade? Are you ready for a new experience of living in the fifth dimensional magic and powerful connection?
then visit CosmicFusion.com today. CosmicFusion.com.
Everyone, we are speaking with a terrific guest tonight, Raven Gramasi. He is the author of Grimoire of the Thorn-Blooded Witch, Mastering the Five Arts of Old World Witchery. And if you would like to be entered into our contest to win a copy of this great book, then please make sure you subscribe to our newsletter, The Fringe Files, for SupernaturalGirls.com. And also follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook, and then you will be entered for a chance to win this terrific book. If you have a question tonight, call in at 646-478-0828, or you can type it into the chat room and I will ask it for you. So here we are back again, Raven. Now, one of the things that I wanted to ask you about, because, you know, when people watch television, they get these crazy ideas and about what witchcraft is. And one of them is that witchcraft is all about vengeance and using spells to hurt people. Can you address that a little bit?
Well, of course, that's not what it's about. But unfortunately, you know, with human, anytime you get humans in the mix, you're going to have problems. So there are people that misuse the arts and the magic of witchcraft, just as there are people who misuse, you know, anything they're involved in. In the mundane world, you know, there are good and bad folks. So, but the witchcraft itself is actually a spirituality or philosophy. Some people look at it differently about who and what we are and how we connect with the natural order of things. And we believe that once you're attuned, you can tap into the natural energy of the earth and use it to enhance your life and to enhance the things you want to manifest in your life. It's like a little extra oomph behind you, if you will. And how you use that, you know, is what determines whether, you know, you're doing something positive or negative. The witchcraft is not designed to be a negative system, and it's not designed to harm people. But, you know, like I always say, you know, you can buy a gun to defend yourself or you can buy a gun to rob a bank. You know, it's not the gun, it's the person.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And that's the same with witchcraft. It's the tool, and how you use the tool is more about, you know, where you're at spiritually than really, you know, anything else. So witchcraft itself is a positive spirituality that looks towards natural connections, and it's not about harming people. It's not about mastering or dominating people or manipulating people. Yeah, it's really about a beneficial gain for yourself and those around you.
That's great. And you talk about in the book, if there is a spell that you talk about here and you explain, and it's, I believe it's called something about binding your enemies. Can you tell us more about that? Because, again, this is, addresses the very nonviolent aspect here. And if you do have somebody that's bothering you or harassing you or whatever they're doing that they shouldn't be, there is a spell that you can use. So talk to us about that.
Yeah, there's a variety of spells that I have in the book, and that's one of them. And I think it's appropriate. You know, if you do have somebody that's harassing you, that's bothering you, that's telling lies about you, making your life difficult to where you have to expend extra energy to deal with this person's what I call idiotic little moment, that you... that you have the right to put a stop to that. We call it quelling magic. You have to quell that. We're not witches are typically not turn the other cheek types. You know, we live a peaceful life, and it's, you know, it's best not to disturb that. If you do disturb that, then you're going to get a reaction. And we, you know, we don't try to harm anybody, but we will quell them, calm them down, you know, shut them down. And sometimes it's a binding spell where you put an energy around them that really prevents them from being able to tell lies about you or harm you or, you know, do whatever it was that they were doing. And that spell, you know, it lasts for a while, so they get the message that this behavior is not going to be tolerated. You know, but we do the same thing in society. I mean, the police will come handcuffed and arrest someone who's broken into your house or beat you up on the street. You know, it's the same thing, that they'll take you away and lock you up for a while.
Right.
If you can't play well in the sandbox, then there are consequences, and it's the same with witchcraft.
So can you give us any examples where either you or someone you know has successfully used a spell like that and you've had positive results?
Yeah, you mean effective results?
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, there's, you know, I can think of one spell in which somebody was telling lies about me, creating stories about me, and then publishing it as though it were true. And unfortunately, in this day and age, you know, people read something on the internet, they just assume it's true.
Right.
And so this person was causing me a lot of trouble. They invented a situation that had no basis, in fact, whatsoever. And then all of a sudden, I started getting emails from people who were appalled at this imaginary behavior. So I worked a spell on that person to silence their wagging tongue, basically, to create a situation. And every time that they tried to tell a lie or to cause me some type of negativity, that it just started manifesting that way in their own life, so that they got so busy trying to take care of the messes that were popping up in their life that they didn't have time to throw it at me. And I see that as a positive spell. It's just basically putting it back on them, so that you don't have to deal with it. You know, it's like a neighbor throwing a rotten piece of fruit over your fence, and you just pick it up and chuck it back, you know.
No, that's great. Now, with these systems of magic that you use and witchcraft that you use, I know there's different school of thoughts about doing magic on your own behalf versus doing magic for someone else. So how do you think about that? What is your understanding, and do you do magic only for yourself, or do you also do magic for other people when they ask you to help?
I do magic for both. I think it's more of a modern Wiccan idea, you know, that people tend not to work on their own so much as for others. But certainly when we look back historically at the witch, people have gone to the witch for help, and witches have done a lot of magic on their own, you know, to stay safe and productive. Again, I just see it as energy, you know, and I put energy into everything I do, you know, even going to the grocery store, you know, so that's for my own benefit. And I do that the same with my magic. If there's something that I need, if there's something that will benefit or enhance, you know, my own life, then I'll work magic to kind of be the wind in the sails for that. For other people as well. If I know someone's ill, if I know someone's having a really bad stroke of luck, if I know that people are working against somebody to make their life miserable, then I will lend my magic to help them out of that situation. So I see nothing wrong with working on your own. I mean, on the mundane plane, you know, people go to college to better their lives. They take extra skills to improve their job and work their way up in a company. So there's certainly nothing wrong with bettering your own situation.
Absolutely. Yes, that's true. So let's say somebody was going through a streak of bad luck. Would they be able to contact you and work with you on that through magic?
Well, you know, there was a time when I was more available. Unfortunately, you know, being kind of well known now, it takes up a lot of my time in traveling and lecturing and writing books and whatnot. But it is one of the reasons why we offer a course of study, because that puts people in contact with us, with me. I like to think that my books kind of are a substitute for direct contact with me, that people can learn what they need from things that I've provided for them in the written form.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, especially this book in particular, I find so helpful. I mean, because you give very specific information. And what a great time we live in when you can write a book like that. I mean, years ago, that could have been a big problem for you if you were an author like this. So it's wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. It's all out in the open now.
Yes, I always say in less enlightened times, they'd have hung you for it.
Exactly, like poor Victoria's great-great-great-grandmother. So.
Exactly.
Yes, that was, again, something that a terrible part of our history, but now things are very open here. So I have a lot of questions coming in from the chat room. And
Okay. Let's
see. Why do you need protection while doing spells is one of the questions.
Well, it's not so much that you need protection when you're doing a spell. Some people just need protection in general, you know, whether, you know, it's, you know, literally, you know, someone's out to get you, you have a stalker, you know, there's a situation in which you feel your house has been broken into before, and when you go away, you know, you want to put protection around it. So it's more of a practical thing. Now, some people will do spells of protection when they're doing a ritual because what they want to do, because you're raising energy and opening doorways to other realms, you want to make sure that unwelcome visitors don't slip through. So your magic can be enhanced to kind of be a filter against anything negative, any negative entity who's attracted by your energy generation. You can build a barrier, which is a, you know, sphere of protection to keep them out.
Okay. So that answers that question. Now, this is kind of a cute one. If someone accidentally uses a tool, one of your tools for magic, for a separate non-magical purpose, so they have to buy a new tool.
Well, they wouldn't have to buy a new tool, but if you're looking at traditional methods, they would have to reconsecrate the tool. They would have to go back through the charging and blessing. Because we consider our tools to be sacred, and sacred means that it's separate from other things that aren't sacred. So sacredness is about a special use, a special time or purpose. So, yeah, if, for example, there's a tool in some witchcraft traditions called an athame, which is a ritual dagger. It is used for casting circle. It's used for a variety of ritual techniques. So it isn't something, you know, that you would use to, you know, slice a potato for dinner or, you know. You know. But if you did or you saw someone else doing it, then technically speaking, you would cleanse it and reconsecrate and bless it.
Okay.
But you wouldn't have to go and buy another one.
Right. Okay. That's a cute question. Now, let's see. Here's another one about charging tools. Do you only have to charge your tools once or keep repeating the process before every spell?
Well, what I recommend is, you know, you do your original blessing and consecration and empowerment of your tool, and then every full moon you refill it with energy, but you recharge it. And so I would say once a month. It would be a good thing to re-empower all of your tools and jewelry and things of your art.
Okay. Now, another person has written in, and they want to know, how can someone find out the secret tree of their ancestors?
The secret tree. I'm not sure what they mean by that.
I don't either, but I think maybe is there... I can't even imagine, but that's what they wrote in.
If they meant sacred tree, because, you know, our ancestors did worship trees, and various trees were worshipped in different cultures.
That could be.
I don't know if that's where they're going with it.
That,
you know,
could
like
be.
The oak is very popular in the north, but I'm not sure really what the question is.
Okay, and then there's another tree question here. Are there certain trees that have more magical powers than others? For example,
well, it's more the trees have different qualities, you know, than they do different powers. You know, if you think of a tree as like any living thing, as an energy producer, various trees produce a certain quality of energy. For example, a rowan tree produces a very nice energy which is used for protection. It just has that quality that seems to to create really nice barriers against negativity. The willow tree is one that seems to open doorways to the other world. So you can use it for spirit communication. The same with birch trees. Birch is a very good wood to use as a wand or a candle holder if you're working with spirit communication. In fact, just a little side folklore that we see among the oldest folklore, that the dead wore hats and vests made of birch wood. So the idea of birch is intimately connected with the other world. So each tree has that kind of quality to it. So it's not that they're more powerful than one another. They just offer different, they have different abilities and offer different opportunities.
Hmm. Now, you've traveled extensively into other dimensions. And when you travel into the fairy realm, do you see it in a different shade of color? Because the fairy realm is often portrayed in paintings and drawings, etc., as being a very, almost like a green atmosphere. Is that how you see it when you travel there?
Well, no, I see it more as a shimmering. It's like everything there doesn't look quite as solid, and it has a shimmer to it. I don't know how to explain it. It's almost like an energetic shine to everything. But it looks similar to this plane, except things look much softer and rounder to me there than they do here. There's not that starkness there. But I believe, I believe just like here on this planet, there are different realms within the fairy world. So it may be that people enter into different zones within that and therefore see it differently.
And now we've heard from you and from others that have been on the show that not all fairies are good.
Well, I don't know that I call them good or bad. I would say that not all fairies are favorable to humans.
Oh, okay.
And so, just like not all humans are favorable to other humans. You know, there's some areas of downtown I wouldn't go into. So it's the same thing with the fairy realm. There are fairies who don't really like us, and then there are fairies who tolerate us, and there are fairies who are willing to work with us. We have, unfortunately, not behaved well on this planet, and so we've kind of created difficulties in other world relationships. Even in the Greenwood realm, the spirits of the Greenwood call humans the termite people because we chew up everything in our path.
Oh my God.
It's difficult. You really have to make peace first with the Greenwood realm and show them you're not a termite person. And once they realize that you mean them no harm, then the whole relationship's different.
Have you heard of anyone who's had a terrifying encounter with someone from the fairy realm?
A terrifying encounter? I don't know that I'd call it terrifying. I know a lot of people who have been startled and left as a result. I don't know that I would call it terrifying, but often when you're dealing with actual fairies, they will test you, and sometimes they will appear to you in a very unpleasant shape or form just to see how you react, because they want to know, are you someone who allows appearances alone to deter you, or are you someone who has the drive to move past that? They're more willing to work with you if you're the kind of person that can pass through the idea of that something doesn't look attractive, but that doesn't mean it's a bad thing, you know. But if everything you see you equate unpleasant to evil, then they don't really want to work with you because they don't really like that mentality. So it's really more like that.
So they'll test I'm sorry, go ahead, Helene.
I'm sorry?
No, that's okay. I just wanted to ask a quick question. Are brownies, or what people call brownies, part of the fairy realm?
Well, some people would say yes. I would say no. I think that things like we call brownies and, you know, leprechauns and all these things, I see them more as kind of interdimensional nature spirits. They're more associated with the material realm, and they have a role in that, whereas fairies are completely other world. You know, they're not really of this dimension. They are a higher order of being. You know, through the time they've been diminished, you know, and then you end up today with these ideas, these little fairies sitting on flowers, you know, that is not at all what the actual fairy realm is about.
No, that's those, it's not, yeah.
No, you know, these are nature sprites and things. It's a whole different classification.
So, can you talk to me personally about trolls?
What kind of trolls?
I don't know.
You mean trolls that are actual beings, or the trolls that wander around the internet?
No. The energetic troll. The couple that have visited me have been cranky, but okay, you know. And
a lot of spirits are like that on the earth
about,
plane, you know. Some are mischievous, or at least that's how we experience it, you know. But we have to realize, you know, we're projecting our humanness on them, you know. And so if they do something that, you know, if a human did it, it would be considered to be a bad or cranky thing. But that may not be true of them. It may just be their nature, but we're misinterpreting it, you know, because I found that most
spirits. Nothing negative about the trolls, other than they were a little cranky, but
right. And then some spirits,
know,
I mean,
just
most spirits
to
want
to
go
way.
About their own business. You know, they're kind of like wild animals. You know, they just don't really want to be messed with or interfered with. You know, and we humans interfere with a lot here. You know, we just think we own the place and we drop around as we please, and a lot of the other beings that share this world with us don't really appreciate, you know, that kind of mindset.
Well, that's the messages they've come to me with, like, get the humans to stop doing this, you know. And
yes, indeed.
You do as much as you can, but I'm only one person. I'm not everybody. So.
Well, I think, you know, we need to understand
cranky,
that we share this world.
You know, they don't want to give their name. They kind of like to yell and kind of crank a lot, but the message wasn't bad. Do you know what I mean?
Right. I do know what you mean.
So
I had an interesting...
Can I chase them away?
I'm sorry, go ahead. I'm sorry? What did you say?
Can I chase them away? Can I chase them
away?
Well,
I wouldn't chase them away because where they are is...
I don't chase them away, but everybody sees them and it's like...
But I don't think there's anything wrong with using some quell magic if it's problematic. And first, I would always give an offering to a spirit and just pleasantly ask it, you know, I would tell it what I'm experiencing as negativity and ask it to stop that behavior because, you know, it's very disruptive to me.
Well, I told him he could hang around as long as he didn't bother my children, so he stopped doing that.
Right, but then you'd probably want to define, I mean, I would define then to it what bothering my children means. You know, because just saying that, you may not be in a mutual agreement as to what that means.
No, we had a long conversation about it, you know, and he's
yeah, well, that's important. Yeah,
around,
I think that's appropriate, sure.
Yeah, but he took his time, stayed around, took a vacation for a little while, and then he left, and now recently I've had two more come back.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
I offer them something. I talk very nicely to them and ask them what their message is, and they seem to have left kind of quickly. So that was good.
Okay.
Yeah. But what would be the reason for them being attracted? I mean, I don't think trolls are common for people to see in New England.
No, they're not real common. Normally, trolls have something more to do with openings and connecting things. That's why in lore they're seen under bridges or in caves, you know, because their whole beingness is about this sort of exchange between places. There are ancestral places that trolls have as their original homes, and so you know, it may be that your place was at one time, you know, a common area for them, and so they're still attracted to it, but they come back and find humans there, and then it becomes problematic.
Yeah, well, it's not a problem right now. They kind of came and talked and left, and that was fine. But the first time I saw them, I was quite terrified. But then I got to have a conversation with them and realized they were just sending a good message. It's just their nature to be a little cranky-minded, you know. But
Well, I think it's easy for people to be startled, especially if they haven't worked with spirits. And then if they actually see one or have spirit activity, they don't understand it. So humans tend to fear what they don't understand, and so they see it as negative. But again, the spirit may not really be intending anything negative.
No, he wasn't intending anything negative.
Our experience of
it
is.
Yeah.
Right.
But, yeah, it was quite interesting. But I was a little shocked the past couple of weeks to see two more trolls because I haven't seen them in years now. So, I don't know. It's just sometimes I think, Raven, that when they know that people can communicate, they're attracted to that.
Oh, absolutely. Same thing with spirits of the dead.
Yeah.
When spirits of the dead know you can see and hear them, then they get very insistent.
Yeah, and they, you know, they see the little telephone on top of your head, and suddenly they say, "Oh, I can talk to that one." Right, Patricia?
Yes. Yes, that does happen.
Yeah.
But again, that's why I think the knowledge that you have, Raven, is so important for people, and especially today, to not be afraid of these things and to understand there are ways of communicating, there are ways of following the steps of ritual to have a deeper communication so that you're not in fear.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's just trying to understand each other is always the best approach.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a question that I get asked most frequently over the years, and that's about love spells. And my personal opinion is not to mess with love. It's the most powerful energy in the universe, and it's up to two people to make it or break it. But there are others who have a different opinion of that. What is your opinion?
Well, my opinion is I would tell someone to do an attraction spell, not force somebody to love them or try to draw a particular person to them, you know, like cast a spell on Johnny, you know, to make him love you. What I say is do an attraction spell. Do a spell that will attract to you the mate that's best suited for you.
Let the universe bring
it in on a wave, you know. And I think that that's much better, you know, because we get in our own way sometimes and we want a particular individual, but that individual may not be the best for us. So
I'm talking about people, and I agree with you 100%, but... You know, sometimes you get the call from the mother-in-law, can you make my son-in-law go away? He's so bad for my daughter, you know.
Right.
And they're running around Salem or somewhere trying to find someone to do a spell to break up their child from whoever they don't like.
You know, and there are people that will do that for you. You know, there are mercenary witches
who will
do anything, you know, that you ask them to for compensation. That's not how my practice is. You know, I'm not anybody. It's just that's not the way I would practice it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I like that. It's that affirmation. It's that, you know, type of spell that you mentioned, Raven. It's kind of like a really nice affirmation. So it is,
and you know, it's a better deal for you to just draw to yourself through magic someone that's well suited for you. To attract the right person rather than to attract a specific person you have in mind. Because again, that person, you know, may not be the best, and we see that every day in the world, and the divorce rate is huge in this country. So that shows that, you know, we don't always make the best choices.
No. That's true. That's true. Now, the moon has tremendous significance in witchcraft. And somebody wrote in and they wanted to know, what meaning do you think the blood moon had last night?
Well, you know, these are natural phenomena, and you know, there are material reasons why they happen. But all these natural phenomena do generate energy. Our ancestors always thought that eclipses were negative things because typically after there's an energy disruption, you know, and it just really depends on what's happening at the time and with the people as to whether that energy that's been disrupted reboots the program and makes everything good again, or does it disrupt and then you've got to work really hard to reconnect. You really never know until the experience is upon you. So I don't think that these things mean anything per se, but they do have energy that affects things, but that can be different. The same red moon can cause all kinds of different things in a future year. So, you know, the only thing that's really consistent is like the full moon. We have consistent energy with the full moon that's reliable, and we can look at that in different months and get a feel for what it's going to do. But eclipses, you know, are natural phenomena that or just expending energy.
Right. Okay. So, again, this I want to keep mentioning to people that you do offer classes. So if it feels in some way overwhelming to people when they're starting out on this path, then taking one of your online classes would be so helpful for them, because you give out, I would imagine, so much information once a month. And a month is a lot. It gives them a lot of time to digest it and work with what you're sharing with them.
It does, and then we're available, you know, for them to contact if they have further questions or need more direction or are having trouble with something. So it's a good, you know, we enter into a relationship with them, and we try to guide them through and establish a sound practice, you know, that is beneficial for them.
Do you do any live classes now where you have them actually in front of you, your students?
Yeah, I still do. I just got back from Galveston, Texas, where we did 4 days of workshops, hands-on with people. And I still do that. I travel quite a bit, and I do in-person teaching and training with people. So, yeah, I still like to do that.
Will you be in Salem this year?
I will be in Salem. I'm hosting an author from England who I have set up to do some workshops in and around Salem during the time. So I'll be there accompanying him, but he'll actually be on, and I just get to kind of be in the background, which is nice for a change.
Now, you write about other magical plants in your book, and one of them is the spirit of vervain. And we hear a lot about that on the Vampire Diaries. They talk all the time about vervain. But what is the real magical use of that?
Well, vervain is one of the oldest of the fairy plants. And we use it for fairy contact. We use it to persuade those gates to open and for the fairy folk to communicate with us, you know, whether you burn it as an incense or you wear it or you make an oil out of it. It's just a really good enhancer for working with fairy contact.
Hmm. Now, do you grow vervain? Is that one of your magical plants?
We do. We grow all the plants of witchcraft.
All of them.
Yeah, we have my wife and I have good 15 years. We grow all the so-called baneful ones. We grow aconite, foxglove, belladonna, henbane, datura, you know, all those. And then we also, we have some magical trees on our property like blackthorn and hawthorn and rowan. And then we also have what I call the lighter magical plants that aren't dangerous to work with, which is like vervain and rue, St. John's wort, hyssop, you know, all those kinds, morning glory, evening glory, moonflower. Those are all very easy to work with. Some of the other plants, like aconite, is a really poisonous plant. You have to be extremely careful when you're handling it. So I don't recommend that.
Do you have to wear gloves when you're handling aconite?
You should, because unfortunately it is quite deadly. And if you have a cut on your hand and you touch an exposed aconite root, if you have an actual cut on your finger, you'll die in 90 seconds, and there's nothing I can stop.
Oh my goodness, that is
so. Gloves are a good idea when you're working with aconite.
Yeah.
But, you know, the interesting thing is, see, in my book, I actually bypass that because I provide ways that people can work with the spirit of the plant without actually having the plant.
Well,
and
that
I think that
sounds
that's
like a good
safer
idea
way.
In this.
Yeah, it's a safer way. You don't have to touch these poisonous plants. I don't recommend that people work with the poisonous plants themselves. You know, it took me a really long time, years and years and years to work safe, to understand them well enough that, you know, I'm safe all the time now, but that wouldn't be true of somebody just happening to get one of these poisonous plants and experiment with it. Would be an extremely dangerous thing to do.
Yeah. Now, what is aconite used for?
It's used for trance. It's used for shamanic vision, other world consciousness.
So that's one that you really want to stay away from unless you know exactly what you're doing. And there's so
right,
many
and
other
most people...
beautiful herbs that you talk
I'm sorry?
About in here. There's so many other beautiful herbs you talk about in here that are not dangerous, so that's where people should start.
Right. You can get a live plant that is of the variety that isn't going to be a problem, and work with those for sure. I have a complete chapter in the book that runs through, I think there's a good 17 or more plants in there that I talk about that you can work with. But again, I really, really stress that people should work with the spirits of the plants first. If the plant is poisonous, definitely work with the spirit of the plant before ever trying to obtain the actual plant itself.
Right. And a lot of the tools and things that you talk about in here are readily available.
Right. The master tool is simply a mortar and pestle.
Okay.
That is the Greenwood Witch's primary ritual tool.
And how
because
is that
that
used?
Tool is brings the plant kingdom together. You know, that's what mortar and pestles are used for. In the days of old, they would grind different plant materials together for potions and whatnot. So it's an excellent tool to have.
And does it matter what material it's made out of? Does it have to be stone or wood, or what does it have to be made out of? Anything in particular?
Well, you can use either, but they have different effects. A wooden mortar and pestle will more readily connect you to the greenwood consciousness and to plant spirits, whereas a stone one, would connect you more with the underground organic memory of the earth. You would be drawing more upon ancestral memory and sort of these older currents of energy that flow beneath the soil.
Mm-hmm.
So they do have different effects.
Now, when you do ritual, do you find that you're able to easily clear your mind and that you don't have random thoughts flying through bothering you anymore? You've been doing this for a long time, so.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've been doing this for, well over 45 years. And, I can just instantly walk into a ritual setting and be there 100%. But in my 20s, it took a lot of work to what I call stop the world and get all the chatter out of your head and stop being mad at your boss in traffic, and be able to clear your mind to do ritual. But now, because I've done it so often, if I just close my eyes and visualize a ritual circle, the energy just forms because I've just done it and done it and done it. It's just the way it is now. But I no longer have those issues, fortunately.
That's such a relief, I would imagine, because, again, that mind that runs wild is torture for so many people. So
it can
that,
be. You have to gain... One of the arts of witchcraft is to gain discipline over yourself, mind, body, and spirit, because you really need to be the master of your own being in order to be effective.
Well, that makes sense. And I would think you've also got to have a quiet mind so you can feel the presence of the
absolutely. You have to be a receptive vessel. And so you have to sort of hollow yourself out, a metaphor there, to be filled. I always sort of visualize it like that when I'm in ritual. I become, metaphorically a chalice that the energy gets poured into and that I contain. So I kind of see it that way.
That's a nice vision to have. That's really nice. Well, Raven, this has been wonderful. Thank you.
Well, thank you
so much.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Well, thank you for having me on and giving me an opportunity to talk about what is my passion. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's truly our pleasure. And again, for everybody listening tonight, this is a must-have, must-read book. Grimoire of the Thorn-Blooded Witch, Mastering the Five Arts of Old World Witchery. And Raven, if you could tell us again your two websites so people can go there and sign up for classes and also read about the other books you've written. What are
right.
the two websites?
Oh, the store is probably your first stop, and that's ravensloft.com. cosmicfusion.biz, B-I-Z. There's a lot of links there that can take you to classes and books and different things. And then my personal author site is ravengrimasi.net, but we also have a new one called houseofgrimasi.com, and we're switching a lot of the stuff over to that one. So I would recommend houseofgrimasi.com and ravensloft.biz.
Terrific. Well, again, thank you for a fascinating hour and a half, and all the best to you and your lovely wife. And again, thank you for coming on the show. And I know you'll be back, because I'm sure you have yet another book to write. So,
oh, yeah, there's no shortage of that, thankfully.
Well, maybe some of that magic will rub off on Helene and I. We definitely need some of that, right, Helene?
Yeah, I do.
Well, thanks again for having me on, and I wish you both all the best.
Thank you, Raven.
Too, Raven.
Many
every
blessings.
Blessings to you.
Well, what a great show, Helene. This has really been fun.
Absolutely fascinating. And I hope that people go out and buy the book, because it's really insightful on how to find a path to spirituality for yourself, how to open to other worlds and put forward your best effort to bring the highest and best blessings to yourself.
That's
which
right.
We all
and
need, right?
It's so well written. I mean, let's face it, Raven's a great writer.
Yeah, he is a great writer.
But he's so knowledgeable, too. I mean, he's not just writing nonsense here. He's writing stuff that is really powerful, really transformative.
But I love his centered perspective.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's no extremes on either end, you know, and so that's really refreshing, too.
It is. Yeah. It is. He's quite the expert. And here he's right in my own backyard here in Springfield. That's amazing.
It is.
Yeah. So next week we are going to pay a visit to UFO land. I can't wait to hear from Robert Salas. He's coming in again with another book. So we'll be talking to him about the latest and greatest with UFOs and all the government involvement, supposedly, things like that. And in the meantime, again, make sure, everybody, that you sign up for the Fringe Files at supernaturalgirls.com. Make sure you sign up on Helene's website, angelslighthouse.com, for Helene's newsletter. And follow us on Twitter, Facebook, so you can keep up with all the exciting paranormal events that we're going to be participating with and offering to you this spooky October.
It's spooky, for sure.
It really is. We're not kidding.
It is.
This is the spookiest one yet. So buckle up, everybody. It's going to be an interesting ride as Mercury retrograde continues to the end of the month. But in the meantime, many blessings to everyone out there. Have a very wonderful rest of your evening, and be sure to join us next week.
Good night, Patricia.
Good night, Helene.
Thanks for listening. Tune in next week for another radio adventure with Supernatural.